There it is, Baron. I hope you're ready for this.
Elias Tulk piloted the leading wag toward the outcrop, which became larger with each passing minute, the narrow entrance framed by forbidding rocks that reached to the chem-clouded sky.
Yeah, I really hope you are ready, because it looks like it's headed for a sandstorm to me.
Tad Hutter gave Tulk a sideways glance that could have chilled him on the spot.
You being funny, boy.
Call it that if you want, but you just take a look up at that sky and tell me I'm wrong.
Hutter looked up at the sky through the windshield and could immediately see that the chem clouds had returned to the previously hazy atmosphere. They were scudding across the red sun and indicated that there were conflicting air pressures in among them.
Fuck it. That's all we need.
With those kinds of winds blowing up there, all it's gonna take is for one little sidewinder to come down and touch base, and it's gonna be a whole lot of fun. Let's hope we don't get it at the rendezvous, huh?
They continued in silence, the outcrop looming larger. Tulk slowed his wag, wanting to take a good look at the approaching rendezvous point. It seemed like they were the first to arrive, as the shape of the arena allowed him to see virtually all angles. The place was clear, and the far entrance was empty. He didn't know about the channels to the side, and a flutter of fear crossed his stomach. What if the Hellbenders hadn't showed? How the hell would he cope with a pissed-off Hutter after the trade? He didn't mind dying in a firefight or hand-to-hand combat as long as Hutter bought the farm. But if he had to go back to Summerfield, he knew that his chilling would be painful and drawn out after the way he had treated the Baron. Maybe Carell knew something he didn't, and everything was okay. He could only hope so.
Looks like we're the first here.
Take her to the entrance and then stop. We'll wait there. That way they can't encircle us.
Okay.
Tulk drove to the mouth of the arena and stopped the wag. Hutter shifted in his seat.
Come on, boy. We've got some orders to hand out.
The Baron left the wag. Tulk joined him, leaving the other Sekhmen in the lead wag on lookout for the approach of the charity convoy, which would be plainly visible through the opposing gap in the rocks. Hutter moved back down the convoy of wags.
Keep triple red, fuckfaces.
Yes, sir.
Hutter's basic plan was that they would begin to move into the outcrop at the same pace as the charity convoy, beginning when Jorgensen's men hit the far entrance. That way, both convoys could keep equal pace and distance.
We don't move to hand over anything till I spoke to Jorgensen. Then we unload our wags and place the goods in the center, between the two leading wags, while they lead the women out. When they're both in the center, then we swap and retreat, keeping our blasters on them.
What do we do if this storm blows up?
We hope it doesn't.
Inside Aisha's wag, Claudette kept her Uzi trained on the driver and shotgun sack, while Aisha watched the women.
How near are we?
How the fuck should I know? I can't see squat for all the dust in front of me. I'm just following the wag in front.
Won't your daddy use the radio when we get near?
Don't give me shit with the attitude, Claudette. You think if I had any feelings left for that cocksucking son of a gaudy whore, I'd be doing this? No, I'd be going forth like a dutiful daughter and getting screwed by every man in Summerfield.
Okay, I get it. So I'll say it again without the sarcasm. Won't Baron Al have orders to give over the radio when we get near?
I guess so. Driver, is that what he's told you?
He told us that we'd get a call from him when we were within 10 minutes' drive. That way we'd be prepared when we get there.
And you know what there looks like?
Yeah.
Claudette spared a surprised glance at Aisha.
You're shitting me. He never told you what was going to happen.
In case it's escaped your notice, I'm a piece of meat just like you, babe. I didn't get fuck all of a say in what happened to me, and I'm damn sure that under the circumstances, there was no way my lovely father was going to tell me anything that was going on. You understand that now?
Yeah, I think I do.
Good. Well, let's just get it together here, because we really need to get some kind of a plan together. Now tell me, driver, what happens when we get to the rendezvous?
You get exchanged for the seed crops and the food supplies.
Don't be a stoop, or else I'll just get Claudette to blow you away, okay? I mean, tell me exactly what happens, and maybe you get out of here in one piece.
Okay, I'll tell you. The plan is that we rendezvous at a bunch of rocks that form an enclosure, kind of like the field where we primed the wags. That means that we're covered on all sides, and there's only us and the guys from Summerfield in the middle with no way of anyone sneaking around from the sides because there's only one exit at each end. So when we're there, we wait for them, and then we get ourselves in the middle of the space, and we make the trade. If all goes well and we get to do it, then you get let out in those shackles over there, and then we exchange you. They load you up, we load up the trade, and we both back out slowly, keeping an eye on each other.
You're not just handing over the wag?
Hell no. You think we'd hand over something as good as this? Anyway, they might think that it's booby-trapped. We'd suspect it to them, right?
Oh, shit.
What do you mean, oh, shit?
I thought they'd just swap wags. I told the others that we'd hold this wag and stop these bastards blasting them as long as they left us alone. But what the fuck are we gonna do if we have to leave the wag? Especially if we have to wear those stoop shackles.
Okay, girl, don't panic about it.
I told you that it was useless. We're all just meat, and we're going to be used by those vile bastards.
Will you shut the fuck up, you irritating bitch?
The big blonde's mouth was a smear of blood and saliva, stunning her so that she couldn't even squeal or cry anymore.
Now will you stop it? This shit's getting old.
We're gonna have to go through with it at least part of the way. No matter what the plan was, we're gonna have to go out there with these shackles on.
We can't do that. If we even make an effort to do that, we're in the shit. We can't step out of here holding blasters, and these mothers will have to have blasters to make it look convincing. Otherwise, we bring all kinds of shit down on us.
There has to be a way around this.
Ayesha picked up the shackles and looked at them. On closer inspection, she could see that the cuffs could be left unlocked and uncoupled, without it appearing too obvious. She looked at the other woman.
Are you with us or against us?
Jesus, who the fuck wants to be a whore?
You got that right.
Uh-huh. We're with you.
Okay, here's what we do. We take the blasters and conceal them, leaving these assholes with one empty blaster that they can wave around. We go out with the shackles undone, and when it all goes down, we head back for the wagon secure. That sound good?
Sounds risky, but it's better than anything I've come up with, so it'll have to do.
You know, babe, I don't think we're in any position to worry about it. We'll just have to roll with it.
The rendezvous point is in sight. The Summerfield convoy is there. And it looks like we got a dust storm brewing.
Carell looked up and sniffed the air. He was standing beside his wag and had been there ever since the distant rumble of an approaching convoy had been detected. The rumble had gotten nearer and finally ground to a halt, the wag engines just ticking over as the Summerfield convoy stood inert at the entrance to the arena, waiting for the rival convoy to arrive. From the opposite direction, a different pitch of noise signaled the approach of the charity convoy. Ryan joined Carell and looked up at the skies.
Storm.
Yeah, that'll be good. We may be determined, but we are outnumbered. Maybe the confusion will even the odds for us.
We know who we're attacking. They won't be sure what the hell is going on.
Carell allowed himself the ghost of a smile, which seemed oddly out of place on his gaunt countenance. And for a second, it gave the one-eyed man an insight into the man Carell may have once been. Kath came running up to Carell.
Papa Joe, they're all in place. Should I send the lookouts up?
Carell's face once again became grim and set as he nodded before turning and mounting the wag once more. Ryan, left standing, followed the small blonde as she ran back to her wag, where Dean, Jack, Doc, and Danny were. So, only JB and Mildred would be attacking from the other side and isolated from the rest of the companions. But JB was more than just Ryan's trusted lieutenant. The two men had spent so long fighting together that in many ways they thought as one, as well as fought as one. Ryan wondered who would be the lookout on that side of the divide. This side, he figured, was obvious. Kath reached her wag and climbed aboard, looking across to Jack.
Let's go!
Jack rose from his seat with an effortless grace and took a portable handset from the blonde.
You know when?
At exchange point, most vulnerable.
Right. Good luck.
Fuck luck.
Jack left the wag, pausing only to clasp Dean's hand. The next time they saw each other, they would be in the middle of a firefight. In the narrow channel, there was little space between the walls of rock and the sides of the wags, and Jack skipped down between them, away from Ryan as he stood watching. The albino hunter was searching for a good place to begin his climb. He found it just past the rear wag, where there was a small split in one of the rocks that gave him a good hand and toe hold. Hoisting himself up, Jack began to scale the rock, which rose for 40 feet and was almost sheer. The sandstone was soft and inclined to crumble, so the ascent was slower than the youth would have liked, each hold having to be tested before he placed himself at its mercy. When he reached the summit and would be observing the trade-off, he had to be careful that no stray rocks were dislodged and alert the enemy below of his presence. He arched his back a few degrees to make the handhold. The extra effort made him break into a sweat, and the muscles in his arms and across his shoulders tensed and cramped at the extra strain. He was fortunate that the foothold was solid and deep, so that he could plant his combat boot firmly and take the strain in his calf and thighs. One deep breath, one pull of his upper torso, and it was done. He was over the worst and up to the summit. The surface on top of the rock was uneven and jagged, and Jack needed to find a niche from which he could observe without being easily spotted himself. He kept low, trying to adhere to a winding path along irregular dips in the top of the rock. After a couple of yards, he found what he was looking for. The rock had a hollow carved out by erosion that formed a small observation post, the rock in front of the hollow enabling him to keep out of view, but also providing, via a split down the middle of the face, a window through which he could see the arena below. Jack settled himself into the hollow and looked through the gap, defining his field of vision. It was a wide area and obscured only the very far ends of the arena. He settled onto his haunches, beginning the wait, wondering who his opposite number may be and how he or she was faring.